And we're live.
Okay. Welcome to Local Roots Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Larry. And I'm in, you know what? Again, like just trials and tribulations just to get the record started. But whenever that happens, it turns out to be a pretty good episode. So we got all like the kinks out of the way is what I feel like. So it's just smooth sailing from here. You know what I mean?
I do. And our guest is someone very special, near and dear to both of our hearts.
Larry. Yeah, it's like we've never met, but Travis doesn't even know this. He's just been a part of almost every important moment of our life.
He's been a part of my body for a long time.
Have you ever been introduced like that before, Travis?
If I had, I would ask which part. You know what
I mean? just to be safe. I've been in a lot of parts of a lot of people, so I just want to make sure.
this has been unique from the get-go. I'm excited to be here with you.
I'm glad we didn't scare him off quite yet.
We have Travis from Old Nation Brewing. Travis, introduce yourself.
My name is Travis Fritz. I'm the one of the two owners and brewer and I guess president of Old Nation Brewing Company. I've been a professional brewer for 20 years.
Wow.
I learned how to brew, I guess, in Berlin, Germany at the Technical University there.
Cool.
Became a master over there in that university, at the VLB, particularly college there in the university. And then came back here and started working around 2002. Mm-hmm. And I've been working in Michigan either as a consultant or a brewer for other folks from that time until about 2015 when we opened up Old Nation.
Wow. So first of all, you're less than or just about 5 years old. Is it really that new?
Yeah.
Well, Travis is 5 years old.
How did I not know that? Yeah. Man, it seriously feels like it's just, you know, you guys hit the scene so hard that it feels like it's just been, I don't know, around forever.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's partly because we've been working in the industry for 15 years with different brands and different breweries. Okay. So a lot of the doors that folks kind of struggle to open, it takes them a while to open, were already kind of open to us. So when we had something that worked, we were just able to be pretty much wherever folks bought this kind of beer.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What I really wanted, sorry if I cut you off, Larry. I'm really curious about the story of M43.
Just get right into it. It's the topic of discussion. It's the staple. It's the reason, you know, and maybe we're wrong, but, you know, we'd assume that's what put you on the map. It was our first introduction to, you know, like New England's in general and why. I mean, I'm drinking some right now. Like,
and yeah, every New England I taste, I compare it to M43 and I'm like, is it as good as M43?
Yeah.
If it's not, like, I don't want it. And I feel like you guys really set the bar high, because I know for a long time, it was kind of hard to find M43. Like, this shit was flying off the shelves. And I know you guys won a couple of awards. Travis, you can talk about that. But it seems like you opened up this just new beer style that almost everybody loves. I know people who don't like IPAs and they're like, but those New Englands, I kind of dig them. And then there's people that love IPAs like Larry, you and I. And then it's like the New England is just like the supreme IPA. And I'm like, oh,
exactly.
Yes. But there's a substantial amount of bad New Englands, which is crazy. Anyway, sorry.
That was like the longest question ever. But basically, yeah. No, I think to sum it up, like, yeah.
We are very invested in M43.
We love it.
That's great, man. That's great to hear. I should tell you, before we go any farther, no hard feelings, but I did listen to your review of M43 from earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
And, we can talk about some of the concerns you raised there. It was good, you know, it was positive generally. But we can absolutely talk about that. I just don't want you guys to kind of not ask me any questions that you want to about it in terms of how it started.
Well, before we go there, what did we say anything bad? Because I love M43.
I don't know which one of you it was, but it was, you know, talking about, you felt like there were some inconsistencies in the cans, but not in draft.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that's okay. It's like a really interesting topic to talk about. So I actually do want to get to it.
Yeah, I would love that because, okay. You know, and might I just add, that was before we talked to the Arvon guys where we actually learned just like how much like shelf life has to do with it. So like that was our early days too.
And I can imagine M43 is very like temperamental when it comes to like temperature.
Well, it is, but I mean, like I said, we can get into the whole thing because we have genuinely work weeks of research and kind of fiddling with this beer. And this we thought would be one of the easiest beers we had ever made in terms of a style.
Really?
And it ended up, when we started. And it ended up being one of the most difficult by far, man, for sure.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Let's get into it. Let's
fill us in.
Yeah. So much. Okay. What a good teaser too. We just
no kidding.
Like six chapters we have to get to now. Okay.
This is my first podcast, gentlemen.
All right.
No. But so, how it started? I like I said, I've been brewing for other people for a long time, and essentially, what that job is like in a nutshell is. Particularly as a consultant, folks would bring myself and my brewing partner, Nate, or possibly just myself in when they were struggling. And this is, remember, like, you know, 15 years ago, up until about 5 years ago. So the landscape of the brewing scene was different in terms of what people were drinking and what folks were making and all that stuff. And largely, you know, the kind of beers we would make is whatever the brewery owner, of course, wanted to make, whatever they thought they could sell. Mm-hmm. So we made tons of IPAs, just straight up West Coast IPAs.
Okay.
You know, you name it, you know, chocolate porters and all kinds of stuff that we developed for people. And, you know, I was really sick of making beer for other people. I really just wanted to make the beer that I had been trained to make, which are largely continental British and Belgian styles that are super classic styles, right? They're really hard to make. They take a ton of accuracy. The dependence on raw materials and technique is huge.
Interesting.
But they are boring to modern craft beer, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's not in the trend. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, right. And I mean, I have a lot of theories about why that is, but I think suffice to say, when we opened Old Nation, I was like, you know, essentially I've been doing this for so long. I've been doing it for about 15 years at that time. I've been doing it for so long. People have paid for me to kind of suggest what to do to them forever. You know, I feel like I should be able to kind of express myself and make whatever beer I want. And the market up until, and this is because the market up until about 2013 was such that if you had a brewery that made, you know, consistent beer and it was good and you put it in a cool bottle and put it on the shelf for a reasonable price, folks would buy it. You'd do fine, right? But starting in about 2012, 2013, that changed. And it became a kind of climate where, you know, it was way more competitive. There weren't 70 breweries anymore. There were 200, right? 300. Sure. Everybody had their favorite. Everybody had their favorite beer. And their favorite of each example of each style and all this kind of stuff. And that's great, right? But, you know, my kind of thought of, well, I'm just going to make five really good beers that people will drink and recognize are good and will be fine was wrong. Obviously. So we started in 2015 in June. And it took us, I mean, it's important, I think, to say that in that year, 2015 to 2016, June to June, we were by far the biggest brewery that had opened that year, right? And there were a ton of them.
Okay. So, and was that due to just foot traffic to the actual brewery, or was that because, and you know, double question, did you start canning right away and selling, and was that part of it too?
So yeah, we did start bottling and putting beer into kegs and getting it out there. And that's why, right? Again, we had all these old relationships. So it was like, hey man, I'm out. I got a beer. Will you put it on your shelf? And
that's just, interesting. Yeah. So the reason I ask is I feel like we've interviewed like two or three breweries now, and a lot of them, it was like, you know, we want to get one done and then we'll kind of shift into the other one. But it sounds like you guys were just like, hey, people are going to like this. Let's just go for it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
that's great.
You know, like we'd run pubs forever. Mm-hmm. My wife runs our pub now. She's been doing it for, I got at that time, 10 years or more, 12 years. I've been running breweries forever. So we didn't have to figure anything out except for what do people want to drink, right?
That's great.
And so we made kind of a throw at it. We were like, you know, what's happening on the West Coast, what's happening on the East Coast in 2015 is, you know, Firestone Walker's making Pivo pills and it's awesome and it's selling out, right?
Okay.
East Coast, same thing. You know, we've got this long legacy of British beers over there and these kind of milder classic British beers are coming back. The way it always has worked is that, you know, West Coast, East Coast, we in Michigan tend to be just a little bit behind them. So, you know, by the time we get this up and running and get the beer out there, people will be ready for it. And that was totally wrong. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So we built this brewery with a capacity of like 10,000 barrels a year. Right.
Jeez. Is that a lot? It sounds like a lot.
It's a lot. I mean,
yeah, okay.
Yeah. You know, I mean, your average brewery out of the 300 and some in Michigan is making, you know, 1,100 barrels maybe, right?
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's big, pretty big then.
Yeah, maybe less. So anyway, we built this brewery and it's not like we were doing poorly. We sold a fair amount of beer that year, but it wasn't enough to support this big brewery. So, you know, we were casting about what, you know, what should we do? Nate and I, you know, read technical manuals all the time, technical quarterlies that come out, we read all the time. And we had been reading about these different, anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Essentially, I had stayed away from like craft beer enthusiast pages because it generally historically hadn't been that fruitful for brewers to go on them, you know?
Okay.
It was, you know what I mean? We didn't understand what they really meant. To us, they just seemed like a bunch of guys who didn't necessarily know what they were talking about. Talking about like bashing our beer, you know?
Okay.
And so
saying that it's inconsistent and shit.
Inconsistent is nothing, man. You know?
Okay, good.
Like, these guys should eat their own tailpipe and, you know, kill themselves. I mean, it was bad, right? Yeah, it gets bad. So anyway, we and not for us necessarily, but that's just kind of the picture brewers had. Anyway, so I'm like, you know, I guess I don't know what people want, right? And I don't just want to make a West Coast IPA and punt, because we knew that would be fine. But it's like, where's the fucking challenge in that, right?
Yeah, you'd sell, but it's like,
Who cares?
It's whatever. Right? You're just lost in the crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. And also Michigan is already home to perennially the best West Coast IPA in the world, right?
Cheers to Two Hearted.
Cheers to Two Hearted. It's fantastic. I mean, I couldn't see any professional reason to, you know, I could do it, but like, ugh.
Right? But why? Why would you make another of that beer?
I
see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was about to, you know what I mean?
well, because how it's kind of hard. If I were to open one today or something, I'd feel like, well, you need something to compete with that, right? Just because what is everyone, you know, like intro to craft beer, you know, you like Two Hearted, like that's kind of like where we all started, right? And then you go to a brewer, yeah. It's like, hey, what do you have that's like Two Hearted almost? So it's like, I don't know. It's easy to probably fall into that trap, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It is for sure. And, you know, but we'd been aware of it, right? I mean, we were around, you know, when Crooked Tree and, you know, I mean, all of these, you know, Centennial, all these beers that were, and I think any of these guys would tell you, they were trying to make it Two Hearted, right? That was
the deal. Yeah, absolutely. Huma, Centennial, they're all... That is their almost like M43. What I compare, I'm like, is this strong IPA as good as Two Hearted?
Right. Right.
Right.
So, you know, Mad Hatter, all these beers. And we're you know, it just kind of, and that is, of course, not to say that any of those beers aren't great. They are, right? But it was like, I mean, do we want to be, you know, what are we going to call it? That's the question, right? Not what is it going to be like or how are we going to make it? What's the label going to be like, right? And that's boring. All right. So
And it kind of, you know, it's hard to stand out in that class, right? Because you got to try to fit that flavor profile, right? So like the only differentiators, at least that I've seen, is like, well, this one has a little more alcohol or a little less, like tiny bit bitter, a tiny bit less bitter, a little more citrusy. Like, but outside of that, like what other profile can you like get creative with without, you know, not being what you set out to be too? So yeah, that's tough.
Right. Exactly. It felt like giving up. Right.
Oh, no.
And we weren't at the point where we were ready to give up yet. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, so we're like, all right, well, what do people want? I went on particularly the Detroit area craft beer enthusiast Facebook page. And, I started kind of checking out what these guys were talking about, and what they were talking about almost uniformly were, it's essentially what they talk about, you know, 5 years later. Actually this was in 2016. So 4 years later. Which is New England IPA and pastry stouts or barrel aged stouts, right? Imperial stouts.
Where, if you remember, do you recall like where they were talking about they were getting these brews from?
Yeah. So they were getting it from New England at the time, and particularly from
New England.
From New England. I mean, these guys were traders, right? They trade for beers.
Ah, okay.
That's a good question, Brian, because I was like, yeah, I've never even seen one on a menu before, you know, M43, so.
Right. Well, it's this whole subculture, and there were three, I guess, really popular New England breweries that were, they were totally set up for hype, which means, you know, they didn't distribute. You had to go to their brewery. There were lines every day, you know, waiting for release of these different beers, you know.
Sorry to cut you off again, Travis. Did these breweries, did they invent the New England style?
So a guy named, I believe his first name is John, but his last name is Kimmich.
John Kimmich.
Used to work at a place that was run by kind of a luminary among professional brewers named Greg Noonan. And I believe it was called the Seven Barrel Brewery, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
And that I think was in New Hampshire, but anyway, it was over there in New England. Greg Noonan was a huge scientist. He wrote a bunch of books. I mean, some of the best books about professional brewing this guy wrote. He's since passed away, but he developed this one kind of yeast called Conan. And it was the progenitor of the New England style just because of the way that it behaved. It really silky mouthfeel. This kind of peachy fruitiness that also comes from more available yeast, right? Called London Ale 3. But in any event, his protege is John Kimmich. I swear to God, his name is John.
You know, I think you're safe here.
you sound convincing.
Yeah, close right, enough. Well, close know, enough for local any, roots.
Forgive me if I'm wrong. But anyway, this guy, John, opens up a brewery called The Alchemist and starts making beer called Heady Topper. And that's kind of the prototype or like the forefather of New England IPAs now, right?
Okay.
Not a lot of bitterness in super ultra saturated aroma and hop flavor, silkier body and mouthfeel. It's not exactly the same as the beers that would come later, but it definitely was where everybody got that idea from.
Okay. Brian, we've had a lot of tangents of like where we're saying something and we go off and do something else. That was the best one because we just got to find out the origin of New England, and that was wonderful.
Yeah, awesome. I was always curious. You know, New England. Yeah. Okay,
great question.
It sounded like too central of a name. Like they couldn't have just invented a new beer style. That'd be absurd. but they did.
Yeah, they did.
That's and good for them.
Good for them. And then two breweries called Trillium and Treehouse kind of took the ball and ran with it. And these were these super hype breweries that were out there that these guys were getting these beers from.
Right. So on. Cool. So to get back to it, you were on those forums and everyone's hyped about these New England. So you're thinking maybe we try one of these. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, you know, we looked at them and we were like, you know, these beers look like chicken gravy, you know, you know, and we'd never tasted them, but you know, people were writing so passionately about
chew them.
Yeah, the whole thing. And right, but nobody was, you know, there's no brewers that were making them. They were like, hey guys, you know, here's the recipe, try one yourself. Obviously, right? They were super protective. So Nate and I did what our jobs had been for 15 years before that, and we just kind of did a bunch of detective work, and we're like, okay, well, we think that this is how they would be making these beers based on the script. Yeah. And anyway,
wow.
Right. So I went in and talked to these guys at the Detroit Area Craft Beer Enthusiast page. And essentially said, if you guys want to, I've got a 7-barrel system. Why don't you just send a few guys in? I'll show you how to make one of these beers and we'll see what happens. And I knew I would at least sell 7 barrels of beer, right?
Okay. There you
go. So they all came in on whatever, they all came in on whatever Saturday or Sunday. I showed them what this was. At the time I was still like, you know, I think this whole haze thing is a gimmick. We hadn't quite figured it out. Anyway, we made one. They tasted it. It wasn't hazy. It tasted really pretty much. It tastes a lot like M43 does, but the mouthfeel wasn't there.
What would it be? Like, what was the difference?
It wasn't as, they call it pillowy, right? That's, or silky, right?
Yeah.
I've made fun of Brian a lot for saying that. That's my fault.
That is the descriptor. Yeah.
I know. And I should just become more cultured. We're on a damn beer podcast.
So Travis, your guys' first shot at it wasn't terrible, is what it sounds like.
No, it was okay. It was good. But it tasted more like Heady Topper, which is the beer that the Alchemist made in John Kimmich, instead of the beers that were coming out of Treehouse and Trillium, right?
Nice.
And these guys wanted those super visually striking beers, and they wanted that, and I'm just going to say this without shame, they wanted that pillowy mouthfeel, right?
Hell yes.
Oh, what a pillowy
mouthfeel.
So they kind of drank it, and a bunch of the people came out to Williamson from Detroit, you know, and they tried it. And the feedback was pretty much like, oh, well, you know, good job, guys, right? Mm-hmm. That was all it was. And essentially, I went out and I was like, look, man, I hear you. We'll do this the way that you want it. I'm really interested to see if you guys care, right? Whether there's haze in it or not, right? How it kind of strikes you. When we do this the way that we think is the way that you want it to. So we made some changes with regard to the recipe and a couple techniques, put out another batch. They came back in, and then that was M43. That's when it started.
Really? So that just what was that? Like two or three iterations then? It was just two or three?
The second iteration.
It was two. Man. Yep. And then, maybe there's some in between you want to get to, but maybe let's fast forward to like, so now you have to like perfect it, or, you know, maybe you decide what you want to get to next, but is next perfecting and getting it distributed, or was next like getting people to try this new kind of beer?
Well, it was really a little bit of both all at the same time. Everything moved really fast. Right. You know, we weren't destitute or anything, but we had not made a lot of money in the last 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And we hadn't sold a lot of beer through our distributor, so they were a little skeptical too. And honestly, I didn't believe it, right? I didn't believe that this was, I thought, you know, we used to call these kind of beers disco beers, right?
Sure. What does that mean? Like
they're here now, and, six months from now, nobody's going to give a shit, and everybody's going to make
them, falling right? star. Yeah, shine bright for a little, but it's gone. Yeah,
exactly. And so I was kind of expecting that, and I'm like, God, you know, how much do I want to invest, and how much of this company's name do I want to put behind this? Nobody knows about these beers, right? Right?
Yeah.
So that was the first thing that we struggled with: like, do we go for it or not? Right.
What about for you? Just like, you know, like, let's put all
sorry,
like
the can hype. You hear me?
Yeah. You're fine, Brian. Okay. So all the hype or whatever, everything, you know, put that aside. What about just like taste in general? Was any of that just like, man, you know, is that enough to run with? Like just knowing that it's really good tasting beer?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I think it is, right? And I think in retrospect, it's easy to say that absolutely it is.
Sure. Yeah. It's way easier now to say that, right? Yeah.
But I mean, in the moment, I hate to sound like a tool about this, but in the moment, you're like, oh, you know, I wouldn't put out a beer that I didn't think tasted really good. Does this taste better than the other beers? I don't think so. Not for their style. You know? And again, you know, when you're talking to this really tiny, almost isolated group of beer geeks, you have no idea whether or not their moms and uncles will like this beer, right?
Good call. Yeah. Like you got captured of like the adventurists or like the trendy guys, but then how do you, the main patrons, right? Like how do you appeal to the masses?
Right, man. And if you look at the people that come into our pub, it's farmers, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Doctors, professors at the university. I mean, it's not, you know, yeah. there are people who come beat for the food in the pub, right?
So yeah. Ale Nation is close to Leary and mine's like hometown of Owosso.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, you guys are from Owosso?
Yeah, we're from Owosso. Yeah. Hi.
That's awesome.
Is so, it though?
But kind of what I was going getting at is that kind of the New England style, I was very surprised kind of came out of the Williamston area.
Yeah.
But it's super badass.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Well, I mean, I'm from around there too. I'm from the other direction, right? I'm from a town called Diamonddale.
Sure.
Originally. And I, you know, I've been working in Detroit forever, and I, you know, before I was working in Detroit, I was working in, or the Detroit suburbs, I was working in Berlin and Warsaw and places like that. And they're all kind of dark cities, and being from the country, I just wanted to get back to the country. So that's why we ended up in Williamston.
And you know, what else is in Williamston? Like, you guys have become a staple there essentially, right? Like, I couldn't name another thing in Williamston.
The Sun Theater's in Williamston, an old movie theater. It's super cool.
I remember when you guys first opened. My family has a small cabin up north. Anyways, but my dad's high school buddy lives in Brighton, and he was telling us over the summer that, you know, every week, you know, maybe once, twice a week, they've been heading out to Old Nation. It's this brewery for food, and he's like, this new beer is phenomenal. It's this M43. It's like, holy shit, it's so good. And we had no idea what he was talking about. We're like, all right, David, cool. Like, it sounds great. I'm sure it's just like any other brewery. And then, like, sure than shit, like, it's M43 is like on the shelves everywhere. And we're like, what the heck? And then I started seeing these signs like M43 sold out. But my parents ended up trying to go to Old Nation a bunch of times, and they said the line was like just nuts. Everyone within like 100-mile radius, if not further, was just like beelining to this new brewery that had phenomenal beer and food.
Wow. Yeah,
well, I'll thank you for both of those things. I'll definitely tell my wife you said that. She's going to be super psyched.
For sure.
But we, yeah, I mean, these two, Trillium and Treehouse, which are in Massachusetts, had a similar thing, right? Both, well, I guess Trillium's closer to Boston, but Treehouse is way out in the middle of nowhere, and people make these pilgrimages to there all the time too. So it was super gratifying and surprising, obviously, but it kind of made sense, I guess.
So were you that third in all those beer maniacs list where they're like, well, you could go to Treehouse, or there's this cool place in Williamston, Michigan.
The middle of Farmtown, Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think so, man. And
we tried.
But we didn't really, you know what I mean? I mean, we did do releases when our distributor was kind of like, well, you know, you sell some accounts and we'll buy as much beer as accounts that you sell to, if that makes sense, right? They weren't keeping an inventory of the beer at first. Mm. So because they were doing that, we were having releases in the pub of M43 or Boss Tweed or Cart Horse, at the time it was Boxer or whatever. But we really didn't want to do that, right? I mean, it's so super lucrative to sell beer out of your pub, right? Because you're essentially making the distributor's cut and the retailer's cut.
Ah, good call.
Right on.
Right. It's awesome, but that's not the kind of brewery we wanted to be, right?
It's hard to scale that. Yeah.
So you always wanted to be in the distribution?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been working distributing breweries for 15 years at that time.
Okay. That's very different kind of take on like any kind of new brewery in the GR area typically does not have their sites anywhere near distribution, like when they first open. That's smart. Which is, it's interesting, kind of going from just starting a brewery, going gung ho, I mean, like, we're going to distribute right away.
Right. Well, I mean, again, you know, I could call the buyer for Meyer on the phone and talk to him about, you know, hunt or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't have those connections. Yeah.
Right. Right. So for us, it was, you know, it was a little bit lower barrier to entry. And essentially what we, you know, what we forgot, because I hadn't been working in sales or marketing, right? So what I didn't really think about, and this sounds so stupid in retrospect, right? But what I didn't think about was, okay, I got, you know, the wholesalers on board. He's going to buy truckloads of this stuff. He's going to sell it to, you know, Meyer. They're going to put it on shelf at 118 stores. Kroger's going to put it on at, you know, 95 stores, and Spartan's going to put it on at all their stores. We're good. Sweet. And I never thought about who the fuck is going to buy this, right?
Yeah. How do people know it's there, but how do people know it's there? Right.
Right. And that sounds so stupid, and it is, right?
What did that look like though? Was it like kind of scary at first? Like, was it not selling, or did that not end up not being a problem?
All our beer is in the store, but like no one's buying it.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I mean, they were buying it, right? But it wasn't, I mean, none of them caught, right? But the shelf in 2015 looked drastically different than the shelf in 2012 did, right?
And what other craft beers are even on there at Meijer? Like, if you probably still got your founder staples there, right? Like,
yeah, you'd have Bell's, Shorts.
Bell's, yeah.
But then Water was huge at that time.
Oh, yeah.
They were big.
Haven't seen that water in a while.
VJP.
Right. VJP.
Yeah. But, you know, the... New Holland, but they're, and Dark Horse, that was about it, right?
Yeah.
And all those guys were doing really well, but only Bell's and Founders at that time was really selling a ton of beer, right? Shorts was still kind of on the upswing, and Dark Horse just was where they ended up parking, right?
Sure.
So
Arcadia was around then too, right?
Yeah, Arcadia was definitely around. In fact, at that time they were just going through this huge rebranding, and like, and I can talk about this shit forever, but you know, but in 2015 it was, you know, breweries from outside of the state had recognized what a kind of powerhouse Michigan was, and you know how many craft beer fans we had here, and had flooded the state, so competition was intense. So to get on the shelf was hard, and it was great that we did it, and I don't blame anyone for looking at the beer going, oh, I don't know who those guys are, and just passing it over, right?
Sure. Also saying, you know, this beer is $10+ for four of them.
Yeah.
You're insane.
Yeah, well, I mean, at that time we were bottling, and our price point was $8.99 or $9.99, depending on the ABV, right?
Okay.
Which is pretty standard.
Yeah, which is, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, this New England IPA, I mean, that was one of the real scare. I mean, you talk about what was kind of, you know, where was their trepidation? And it was in the price point. And we were like, man, if we put this out, right, we have to charge like $14 for a 4-pack of this beer. And that is ridiculous, right?
And is that because of the you know, the R&D that goes behind it? Like, I mean, or is it in the ingredients itself? Or, I mean, probably both.
In order to make one of these beers, these New England IPAs, as well as we know how at Old Nation, it is the most inefficient process I've ever been involved in life, right?
No shit.
Okay. Can you give us an example?
Sure.
it's like, fuck yeah, I hate it.
Here we go. I think about it all the time.
I'm losing money as I speak.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the first of all, you're putting a ton of really expensive raw materials into the beer, particularly hops, right? Mm-hmm. So you're using, you know, these kind of cutting edge hops, and the way the hop market runs is essentially there are four or five kind of cartels that have family farms behind them. I'm serious here.
The Amish mafia at work.
They call them guilds, but they operate like cartels. Right? So
okay. The Brewers Guild is after you.
Yeah. So they, in the classical sense of the word cartel. Yeah.
Right. You wake up with like a bag of hops in your bed next to you.
Yeah. So it's crappy. It's like cheesed out. It's like 8 years old.
Only hops.
Yeah. But, these folks, if demand is high for something and they don't have a lot of it, they have zero compunction charging a ton for the thing, which makes sense, right? That's raw capitalism. But, you know, what that does to a brewer like me starting out with M43 is, first of all, thank God I have connections with these hop growers so I can get these hops at all at any volume. And second of all, holy shit, you got to charge $14 for a 4-pack of stuff, sure. Right? Because when I'm distributing, what I get paid by the distributor, which is the last time I get paid, is half the value of the case when it's actually on the shelf at the retailer, right? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
right? So the distributor's marking it up 50%, and then the retailer mark it up anywhere from 30 to 50%.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm like, anyway, so I'm like, Jesus, dude. Oh, let me finish. You asked a question. So why it's that expensive? First of all, the hops are expensive.
Yeah.
Second of all, half the recipe is either malted wheat or malted oats, which are significantly more expensive than malted barley. Mm. And third, we're trying to cram so many hops, which is an organic, it's a flour, essentially. It's just a ground up flour. And when you put that in a liquid, it absorbs a great deal of that liquid.
Mm.
And we're doing that in two different stages. So
we have, for example, twice as much beer. Yeah.
Exactly. We have, and that's true for a lot of West Coast IPAs too. The difference is there's so many of these hops that we have a 40 barrel system, for example. So every time we make a batch of beer, it's 40 barrels that goes into the tank. And our tanks generally are 80 to 120 barrel tanks. And the reason I'm telling you this is because what comes out of a 40 barrel system when we make a batch of M43, because of the amount of hops we put in there, is about 28 barrels, right?
Wow.
So.
So what is that, like a 33% drop off?
Yeah, it's significant. And then
there's all the quick math there, Lawrence.
Yeah,
well done. Probably wrong.
Well done, bravo.
Let's say it's not. But then we'll do this again in the fermenter and we'll have a similar loss. So what starts out in theory as 120 barrels of beer, for example, will end up being more like 92 or so, right?
Okay. So just so I'm following you, so your New England process is kind of similar to like a maple syrup process where like shit ton goes into what's going on, but you only get a little bit of product.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's different and maybe not quite that drastic, but I think it's a good tool to use, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
And is this in comparison to other, like, so you said like it starts at 110, you end up with like, you know, 190. What is a typical, like, let's say IPA, like what's your drop off there? Like, or is there none?
Yeah. Generally about 15 to 20%, depending on the brew, right? And in a West Coast IPA.
And then yours is almost double the loss.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And a little bit more sometimes, but,
yeah, but you see, these are the things that I would never know. Like, this is very interesting to me.
I would
not
think that hops suck up water.
They're stealing beer out of our damn mouths.
It makes sense, but I never would have thought that.
Yeah. These goddamn hops.
The hop mafia.
They make like a pills. What's your guys' pilsner?
It's just called pills.
I thought it was just called pills. Okay. I did have the name right. Cool. So what's the like loss of liquid looking like for those kind of beers?
12%.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
So it's still higher than I would have thought originally, but not as high as the New England's. Okay.
Yeah. It's manageable. And I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff. Like with these beers, in order to get everything exactly like it's supposed to be, we have to use a fresh batch of yeast every time, right?
Wow.
And generally we'll have to propagate a whole new batch of yeast, which takes equipment that we wouldn't normally have to use and all kinds of stuff. And it's also really expensive. But if we didn't do those things, and there are a lot of breweries out there that are making hazies, particularly the bigger guys that are making hazies that don't do those things. Right. And I've talked to those guys and they're like, dude, you're such an idiot. You should just do this. And I'm like, man, we have the same degrees. We've done the same things. I understand what I could do.
Right? But what if I did that? Off, man. Let me do my craft.
Well, I mean, if I did that, the beer would be objectively not as good. Right. That's the deal.
Yeah.
Well,
I kind of appreciate that because I don't like, you know, I don't mind the, like, what is it, extra $2 or $3 to get, you know, a better beer. That's not bad. The same reason we go to Arvon and pay $5 a can. It's because, you know, a better beer.
Yeah. I mean, there's a substantial difference when you go from a hazy, I don't want to point fingers, Bells, I love you, but,
the official?
Yeah. Official is
terrible. I mean,
it's some weak sauce.
It's not good.
I feel like they had a big, they could have been a home run and they missed. I was going to say, deflowered is one of my other favorite New Englands.
That actually came out before M43.
Did it really? And that didn't take off?
I mean, they're not, you know, I don't think that big production is really where those guys are at. They're great brewers, you know? Mm,
that's true. Yeah. I think which just had, yeah, they're not huge. I see that whenever I see that beer, I'll like buy it. Cause it's typically, you know, kind of economical, New England. And I think they're doing good stuff, but
yeah, they are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just really bummed with Official. This is what I'm trying to get at here. Well, I'm so excited it came out.
I mean, look, if somebody said, you know, before we did M43, I mean, this is my job. People would call me up and ask me stuff like this. If somebody said, look, you know, well, we want to get in on this hazy IPA thing, but we don't exactly know how. Here's our budget, and here's what we want the shelf price to be. Then I would make a beer exactly like these bigger breweries' hazy IPA, right? It fits into their distribution chain. It's not as relative to temperature or time. It's much more durable. I mean, there are a lot of sort of traditional positives with regard to technical specs that these beers have. What I think they miss is the kind of perfect inefficiency that you need in order to make one of these beers jump out, which is kind of the nature of the style, you know?
Very great interesting.
Point. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that was a lot to digest, but one thing that I think that I'd like to get to in this kind of epilogue or whatever you want to call it. So let's get to that point where it became a hit. That's what I'm curious. Like, what was that thing like where you finally realized, like, and maybe it was right at the inception or whatever, but it didn't sound like that anyways. It sounded like there was a little bit of a growth period, but like, what was that? Like when Brian said the line's out the door, like when did that stuff start happening?
Yeah. So this all happened when I told you the first batch, second batch, that happened in between like September and October, November of 2016. And right around the first, well, no, that's not true. Right around December 13th, I think it was December 3rd. No, it would have been December 11th. I'm sorry.
Sure.
right, December 11th, okay. We had this release that was like 200 cases, right? Uh-huh. And I was like, you know, there's no fucking way that we're going to sell 200 cases of this shit out of our pub in Williamston, right? and not only did we sell it, but like you guys said, there was this line out the door and people were buying like five cases and, you know, I mean, it was gone within a couple of hours and we were stuck there without any beer, just telling people we're sorry. Right.
Oh, shit.
Right. Then right around the first of the year, we did one that was 400 and I was like, listen, now I'm right about this. This is bullshit and this is not going to work. Right. Sure enough, 400 cases, same thing. And by then we had, and by the way, this never happens. We had retailers calling us like, when are you going to get off your ass and give us this beer, man? You're being a dick of it, right? Right? And I'm like, shit, man, we got to get some scratch together. We had just spent, you know, not the last of our money, but we didn't have a lot of cash laying around. And I had just spent some of the last of our money flying out to San Diego to buy this three-head canner, right? And I'm like, fuck, man, you know, this thing does like a pallet of like 60 cases of beer a day. Oh, right. So I'm like, oh, man, you know, right. Well,
oh, no.
60 cases of beer a day was not going to come even close to cutting it. Right. All I was going to do was piss people off. So,
but what did you have before that? Probably nothing as close as that. Or did you buy that and then realize, shit, I had to buy something way bigger.
Well, I bought it because we started fiddling around with New England IPAs and they were all coming in cans. And I'm like, you know, I don't know how to spend marketing money. So I'm going to market this by putting it in the cans that people put this shit in. Right.
Okay. I guess. Yeah.
And I know how to use a canning line and I don't know how to use social media at the time. Or whatever.
Right.
Analog, so, baby.
Right. I'm now 41 years old, man. I missed it by a couple of years, yeah, but, okay.
Not missing much.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Well, I did it for a while and then I ducked out, but anyway, anyway, we just bought this canner and I'm like, shit, man, now we got to get money to get like an automated canning lineup. And that just takes time. It takes like 2 or 3 months just to get one of those built, even if you do have it. So anyway, now we're just racing, right? We're making as much of this as we possibly can. We're working 16, 17, 18 hour days. We're trying to put out as much as possible. And at this time, our distributor still wasn't working with us. They're like, well, we're not going to keep an inventory, right? So you have to close a deal.
Whoa.
Confirm it, have the retailer call their rep, right, from the wholesaler, and then we'll order it from you and they'll get it the next week, right?
So you need storage too, is what it sounds like.
And absolutely. And we had enough, right? But okay, just good. Barely.
And so anyway, on top of this all, you know, let's not forget, you just got done saying, not only did it take off and you have to like preload all of this, but it's also one of the most expensive beers to brew. So you have to like front load all that cash too. That can't be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my partner, is a saint, and okay. he put a lot of faith in this brand and myself and Nate and the rest of the team. And I know this sounds like a quarterback after the Super Bowl talking, but it's true.
But you're going to Disney World.
Right. I mean, thank God it paid off.
It really sounds like you had like kind of the perfect problem of you have all these people that want your beer and your only issue is that you couldn't make enough of it because you knew it would sell. So you could kind of invest as much as you wanted in the production and be like, this shit's going to sell. So let's just fucking go.
But you always have the sense of if I don't catch this tiger by the tail, it's going to run away from me, right?
Like if the fad's gone tomorrow or something.
Right. And then I'm going to be stuck holding the bag, right?
That's scary, yeah.
Because it kind of seems like the milkshake IPA failure. I still like them, I know, but that seems like a fad that's kind of went and gone. But New England, it seems very much like it is here to stay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one of the things that Nate and I saw early on here was that this is pretty meta, but there are some similarities in the way these things drink, particularly M43, I think, to more traditional styles of beer, right? In that, I mean, are they big? For sure. Do they have differences in mouthfeel and obviously hop aroma and stuff? Yes. But the finish should be clean, right?
Ah, that makes sense.
And it doesn't like linger or become like flannely or whatever. It just
my
is.
My teeth don't feel fuzzy after I just took a sip of M43.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I think you have low residual sugar. Is
right.
I'm assuming that's what that is.
And it's not. Yes. I mean, relative cool to the style. Yeah, right. It's true. So a lot of the technical specs on that beer in terms of drinkability from like a food science perspective are a lot like Pilsner, right? It has bitterness, but it's just the balance, right? It has, you know, a lot of these. It has a clean, acidic finish that kind of cleanses the palate and prepares it for another drink. And these are old, essentially food science principles, right?
And it checks all those boxes.
Yeah. That is wonderful. I'm listening to you.
Yeah,
it tastes like, tell me these sweet words in my ear as I'm drinking. And I'm like,
I feel bad. I didn't prepare. I drank my this weekend. I actually had the four pack of what are they? The
guava boss.
Boss Tweed guavas. Yeah. I had my last one of those this weekend, but not bad. Those are pretty good. All right. Controversial take. I might like the bus tweets a little more than M43, but
that's not that controversial. I think people say that a lot. I do. Okay. Too.
Okay. I just can't have as many of them.
Yeah, they're a little stronger. Right. Yeah,
right.
This double white shawl. I can't even say that word from Arvon. Another delicious New England. Have you had Arvon, Travis? Friends with those guys?
I spoke to that brewer before they opened up. And I have not gotten down there, but I've had a couple of their beers yet.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've not had
they're
a bad
doing
beer
good
from
stuff
them.
Too. Yeah.
Except this one's almost 10% for New England. And I feel like I'm going to pass out after one.
I'm having a little glass of rye whiskey here. So I'll be with you.
Ooh, do you get sick of beer? You got to get a little sick of beer, right?
You know, this sounds like such a cheesy brewer thing to say, but it's true. I don't get sick of Pilsner, but I do get sick of, you know, the bigger, crazier crap.
Well, that's exactly what Jake from Arvon said.
Yeah. He said his favorites are Pilsners. And Travis, what are your favorite beers to make?
Pilsner.
That's like your go-to. That's
isn't
like
that
your
great?
Bread and butter.
Yeah. German beers, right? Helles.
Okay, Pilsner. Yeah.
Vienna, you know, stuff that takes, I think the reason why brewers like that, it's the same reason why like music, like guitar players like Frank Zappa, right? Okay. If you're familiar, is that like, I mean, is the normal person going to sit down and put a Frank Zappa record on and enjoy it? And maybe,
probably not.
But probably not, right?
Yeah, yeah, I get
it. Right? So the thing about a Pilsner is I can go into anybody's brew pub, right, or brewery, and if they've got a Pilsner on tap, I can drink it and tell you exactly what kind of brewer that is.
Mm.
Right? It's like the brewer's code.
Yeah, does he or she have good attention to detail? Are they, you know, respectful of tradition? Do they understand the fundamentals of brewing? It's like if you've ever heard of like chefs saying, you know, if you're in a Michelin-starred restaurant, you're interviewing for a position as a chef, they'll say, cook an omelet, right? Just cook an egg as an omelet, right? Nothing but salt and egg, right? And then they'll grade you on that. It's kind of the same thing, right? It's all about technique.
That's wonderful.
And you can taste it.
And it makes perfect sense, yeah.
Yeah, at least from my understanding, my father has dabbled in home brewing, and he's love him, but fucking God, man, he's terrible at it. But he always says that they make IPAs because they're easier to make than like the Pilsners are, because 100%. They can hide their F ups with more hops. Okay. But the Pilsner, like you're screwed if you mess it up.
Yeah. And I mean, we talk about Pilsner, but I mean, we could talk about export beer, Dortmunder, or Helles, or there's a bunch of substyles that all this counts for all those beers. Yeah, for sure, there's nothing to hide behind. But I guess more than that, in an ale, you want the characteristics of the yeast, right? And it's okay to go overboard in one direction or another, right? That's what those beers are there for.
Okay.
Right. IPA particularly is there to showcase hops. And in the case of New England IPA, for example, yeast as well. And the phenols that it produces as it ferments. So those aromas that it creates. But in the case of Pilsner, it's all about restraint and removing those things so that all you're really tasting is yeast and grain intermingling, like in bread, for example, right? To create a one thing. If you smell bread, you don't think, oh, I'm smelling yeast and grain, right? You think I smell bread, right?
Bread. Okay. Yeah.
You make same that sound so cool. Like for no real.
Shit. Yeah.
like,
this is phenomenal.
Yeah. Like with no offense to it at all, but like, I mean, I would say a Pilsner is probably like a boring beer, you know, it just kind of is. It's just not crazy, you know, but you just made it sound so like regal, you know, like so like fancy and like, well, if you, a true beer drinker can tell a good Pilsner. Like you don't see that. Like the craft beer heads are like, oh, I want hoppy ass fucking IPA. Right. I can't think about it.
Kind of dabble into the actual craft beer guys are like, don't give me the hops, give me the Pilsner.
Yeah,
right. I say this a lot, right? Because I had this conversation with folks, it seems like at least once a month. But I make this allusion a lot to music, right? So if you think of, you know, an ale like a New England IPA or an Imperial Stout or whatever, I would make an allusion with that beer to punk, right? It's loud. It's like everything all the time. It's super catchy, right? Oh, because it's right? It's in your face. You cannot deny the power of it, right?
Yeah.
That's fine, right? That has its place for sure. But Pilsner and beers like Pilsner, particularly, I mean, let's just say traditional kind of continental and Belgian, and which would be continental, but Belgian, Germanic and British beers are a lot more like classical music or jazz, right?
That's a perfect analogy, because you can, in classical, you can hear every single instrument and no distortion at all, right?
Yes,
and you can tell if anyone fucks up on any single note.
And you can tell, was the, you know, the orchestrator, was he piece of shit or was he good?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Great analogy. And when you love it.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
You really love it, right? Because you get it, right? You don't have to get punk to enjoy it, right? Yeah. It just, I mean, you get, or you get it viscerally or whatever, you know.
What a great analogy. That hits me right over the head. And I'm guilty for being a punk boy for sure.
Yeah. And that's like, I mean, that's, I play guitar since I was 11 years old, and I started playing thrash music, right?
Nice.
So I'm with it, right?
Hell yeah.
But, and I'm with it as a brewer, too. I mean, I made, you know, my own future on a punk beer, right? But I know how to play classical, right? And I really enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's the truth. And way to have both. And this brings me to a question I love asking when we talk to brewers is, and it's kind of two-sided, but there's, you know, you got to be balancing these two things all the time. Like when you're thinking of your core menu, right? And you're talking, you know, like you can only have, what, I don't know, 10 beers on tap or whatever, or what you're serving. How many of them are the hits that you want to just have on deck, like no matter what? So like the staples of your brewery. And then how much of it is like adventurous, finding something new, maybe cashing in on some of the trends or exploring new trends and maybe not cashing in, but you know, how do you define that balance, or is there no balance and you just stick with what's working? Because you know, everyone's answered this different, and I don't think there's a wrong answer, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, between Camilla, my wife, and Nate, my brewing partner, and myself, we have thought about this question for, you know, 15 years together.
Sure.
And what we came up with, I mean, we've gone through a lot of different phases, and all of them were reasonable, right? But what we came up with was essentially this. And I mean, this sounds so ridiculous, and I could go into why, but I won't, right? But
okay.
You should have 12 handles at your pub,
okay. Right?
Less than 12 is not enough. More than 12 is too much.
Write this down, everyone.
Take some notes. And
you should make 4 beers that you know people are going to ask for when they come in the door because they saw your sign on the road and they were passing through and they stopped by, right?
Okay.
So you should have a Kolsch or a Golden Ale or a, you know, an inoffensive yellow beer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You should absolutely have a West Coast IPA, yep, or pale ale, right? You should absolutely have a stout, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are a ton of people who are just like, man, I'm a real stout guy. And you're like, well, what kind of stout do you like? And they'll name 3 and then that's it, right? But a stout.
Yeah.
An amber ale, right? And then you're good, right? An amber ale or an amber lager, like beer, and then you're good, right? You're covered. Everything else,
yeah,
for us, right, has to answer a question that occurred to us, right?
Okay.
That's how it stays interesting, right? Because people will or will not like any number of different beers based on whatever metric they grade beers on, right?
Absolutely.
So why drive your own head into a rock trying to figure out what their metrics are? You know, if there's a question like, man, how did they, you know, you drink beer with your buddies as a brewer, with your buddies, and you're like, God, how the fuck did they do that? Right. Well, that's a valid enough question to ask. So try it. Right. And probably, you know, after a while, you have enough experience that you'll probably be at least marginally successful. And then you put that on and see what people think, and your pub becomes not a place where you're trying to rat out on folks and freak out squares and impress them. But you're just kind of watching people and how they react to the beer and talking to them and hearing why they like it or why they don't like it.
Wow.
And that has value, right? That's why you don't charge people. I mean, what do we charge, like $3.75 or $4 for a pint of beer at our place, right?
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome.
Because if we charge more, man, we're experimenting with a lot of stuff. We know it's good. We know it's all going to be worth $4 a pint or we'll throw it out. But there's also times when we make stuff that, you know, somebody's going to be like, well, I like a sour beer. And we're going to be like, well, you might like this one, but it may not be right up your alley. I mean, I've comped more beers than I can tell you, because if somebody goes, you know, man, you suggested this to me and I don't like it, of course I'm not going to charge you for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a nice guy.
Have you guys dabbled in the sour world?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, man. I apprenticed under Pierre Celis and Jean-Luc Seiss. So that's the guy that started.
One more time. Who was that?
Brian, you don't know him? Oh, awkward.
That's what Pierre Celis.
Yeah, I'm straight name dropping. But Pierre Celis is the guy that started Hoegaarden.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jean-Luc Seiss was the guy that wrote all the recipes for Unibrew. So like La Fin du Monde and Trois Pistoles and shit like that. So,
wow. Brian, thanks for not knowing who that was. Cause
yes,
we would have blazed right by that.
Hey, that's crazy. We are gaining so many folds right now.
So many. Yes.
So yeah, Belgian beer is absolutely near and dear to me, which is why we don't do a lot of it. honestly. Okay. Because right now you can either, I mean, from our perspective, you can do Belgian beer the way it's always been done, or you can do it, which we like, or you can do it commercially, which is essentially like kettle sours and stuff like that. This is not to say that kettle sours are bad. There are good kettle sours.
I mean, I love them.
Yeah. They don't ring as cleanly as real sour beers though. Right.
Sure. I totally get it.
Right. And I think what brewers miss, particularly in the US, is due to in the tradition of Belgian beer, right? Sour beers are not one-offs, right? It's not like I had this barrel and I put this beer into this barrel and I let it get funk and then I gave it to you, right? In Belgium, sour beers aren't about brewing. Sour beers are about blending for consistency, right? Mm. So the art is in, you know, there are different, you know, there are different bacteria and different microbes depending on the season or the day or the month or the weather that you're brewing in, right?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So you'll end up with a ton of different kind of beers, and it's the brewer's job to blend those into something that tasted exactly like it did last week, right? And that's hard.
How do you do that? Yeah, that sounds tough as hell.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
Have you been to Speciation or had any of their beers?
Mm-hmm.
So Leary's younger brother, Alex, bought Alex and I an engagement gift. Kudos to him. We loved it. And it was this really badass beer that they made, and they used a kind of open fermenter thing, and they put it by all the different Great Lakes. But all of it was the same base, but all of them tasted like wildly different because of the environment they were made.
Right. So this is what brewers and food scientists call indigenous microflora, right?
Yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah, totally.
So there will be different bacteria and microbes that are, you know, that are in whatever region you're in. And those will, of course, produce different beers. But the first person who did that in Michigan was not Mitch at Speciation. It was Ron Jeffries at Jolly Pumpkin.
Cool.
Jolly Pumpy was first. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure they love being called Jolly Pumpy, by the way.
They make a damn good pickle pizza, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
I know Ron, and I know he would not give a fuck if he said Jolly Pumpy.
Okay, good.
Jolly Pumpy, what up?
But yeah, man, I mean, you know, Belgian beer is a whole different, I mean, I could spend a day talking about Belgian beer, but.
I have one more question for Belgian beer real quick. This is just a yes or no. Is a Flanders Red considered a Belgian beer?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
those are my favorite sours.
Yeah. So the language they speak in Belgium is Flemish. It's a kind of Dutch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Flemish is from Flanders. That's where it's from. It's a region in Belgium.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're
we've learned more this episode maybe than like this episode
I've learned more today than I have like in a long time.
I know it gets me like re-excited about beer. Like it's just like there's so many more nuances than you give it credit for sometimes.
Yeah.
I love this.
I was dabbling into a little bit of Owosso Shiawassee County beer history. I'll make this quick, but Travis, you may find this interesting. Our friend Taylor Sargent, Larry, you know him, is a history teacher, and he was sending me some links, and that Owosso had a brewery in like 1890. And it went from 1890 to 1910, and the entire county of Shiawassee voted like unanimously to go dry, and all of the breweries went to shit, and they never reopened.
Wow.
Assholes.
But there were two in Owosso, and they speculated there was one in Corunna, which is crazy because now there's obviously no. I mean, there's Williamston if you want to go to, you know, Old Nation, but that's it.
But yeah, nothing close in Owosso,
which is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, but this is what's so interesting about beer to me throughout history, too. And I mean, like going back to the Hanseatic League and Central Europe and all this stuff is it's crazy how deep into the real fabric of, and I mean, I know this sounds kind of like what a brewer would say, but I really do think this is, it is always what I come back to when I lose interest in beer, which happens every 5 years or so. Right.
you have to, right?
Right.
How
deeply interwoven beer is into the history of every place, at least that Europeans settled, in, you know, recent, in like recorded history, that there are these trade routes that still exist, these roads and cities that are still, you know, of prominence, that existed largely because they made one or another type of beer that was durable enough to travel a distance, right? That Which rules. Sounds mundane until you realize how that plays into the beer styles that you drink now, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just, it's like, I mean, yeah, the popularity of a beer
is in the world. That's why beer is so good. Beer.
Yeah. Okay. Say that one more time, Ryan. Beer is in the world, and that's why it's so good.
Yes, it is. The world we live in has been constructed with beer.
I mean, it's
beer is the glue that holds us together.
Right. Right. I mean, you know,
we just, that's the cheesiest the pot has ever gone, but I mean, it's true. Yeah.
No, I'm
not going to argue it.
My dad, he'd beer guy, and he's like, you know, the monks used to brew beer, you know, back in, you know, 1870, a long time ago, there's always been beer. So we're going to have a beer now. And I'm like, okay. Here we go.
I mean, I don't think you need a reason to drink a beer, but if you do, that's good. That's good as anything.
Never need a reason, but.
So, but anyway, man, but now we answer to different needs, right? So for example, brewed IPAs were this response to New England IPAs, right? They're coming out of the West Coast, right?
Yep.
I think these West Coast brewers were a little bit emotionally affected at the fact that, you know, that the fact that New England had risen to prominence with regard to IPAs, right? And it had been their game on the West Coast for 2 decades, right? And so what we thought they did, right? I mean, we looked at this with old brewers' eyes, I guess, and we were like, okay, brute is not some radical new style necessarily, right? Brute is essentially smart, savvy marketers, right, who are also brewers on the West Coast, saying, okay, what is it about New England IPA that people really like? Well, they like that it has an inoffensive bitterness. They like that it has a really intense, fruity, hot profile. And they like that in the context of really good ones, it finishes cleanly and is just a well-constructed beer. So what can we do? We can add these distiller's enzymes to the mash of what is effectively a New England IPA brew, so that the yeast can ferment out all the sugars and there are no residual sugars, as you said, left. Mm-hmm. And it still hits all the notes that New England IPAs hit without that third leg of the kind of pillowy, silky mouth, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of how we approached the style when we made one. Presently, beer drinkers thought it was cool and then thought that it was not cool anymore. But we were like, God, man, there really is something here to this style, right?
Yeah. And so are you still making that one? I remember having it last summer, but I haven't had it in a while.
Yeah. So we make it exactly.
Yeah.
We make it as B43. And we make it because there's, you know, obviously we live in Williamston. It's a small community. The CrossFit gym in Williamston is a big deal, right?
Okay.
And we have those people come in all the time. CrossFit folk, the Venn diagram between CrossFit folks and people who drink craft beer in Williamston is pretty much just a circle, right?
Okay.
So
you need some low-cal beers.
Well, yeah, it's not even low-cal. These guys, they're burning calories. They don't really even care about that. They're trying for low-carb, right? They're trying to hit their max.
Okay, sure.
Right?
Okay. Gotcha.
and we're like, God, well, first of all, this is a really drinkable beer, like a Pilsner, even more so than a New England IPA, right? That it is extremely crisp, right? And extremely light in body and easy to drink. I still believe in this style. I think that a lot of folks approached it the wrong way and it turned people off to the style.
Okay. Do you want to say founders?
No. I would never point
out. What were some bad ones? Or Brian and I can talk about it. You don't have to. Brian, I kind of like the founders one. I just got bored with it after one beer.
Yeah. I was over it. I really like Short's Juicy.
That wasn't Juicy Brew.
I think is what it was called.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, it was. That was awesome.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I actually loved that beer. That was good. And then the B43 was great because it still had all the fruity, delicious profiles of M43, but it's good.
Super short story. One of our last pre-COVID bar outings, I remember it was with you, Larry, and Gino, and we were going to see Hot Mulligan and went to the Tin Can before, and our server, for some reason, gave us B43 for free. And
God bless.
It was awesome. Yeah, we were like, why? And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, all right, well, game on.
That was the last thing we did before COVID.
Yeah. And then the weekend after that was our snowboard trip, and then world, you know.
Not to totally derail this, Travis, how have you guys been with COVID? I mean, obviously it's hurting brewers and everything. Have you guys found a way to sustain? What are you guys working your way back up? How are things going?
We are among the lucky brewers.
Good to hear.
Yeah, man. It for us, it's been pretty much a non-issue. So, for example,
awesome.
Our love pub was never more than about 10% of our revenue.
Okay. Good. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Right. And we went to curbside and we lost about half of our pub business. Right. Sure. We didn't grow this year, but we're down about 5%. So we're down the business that we lost in the pub. It's not a big deal, man, at all.
Yeah. In the scale of things. Yeah. How could you complain with that? Yeah.
Right. We're not complaining. I mean, what we're doing, I'm not trying to brag about this. I'm saying we're in a position where we truly are thankful at how well we've weathered this storm.
Yeah.
And so we decided to do a big family adoption for Christmas this year. And it's mostly my wife.
Love where this is headed.
I'm writing checks, but she's doing all the work. And so we ended up adopting almost 20 families. It's, you know, some 40 kids and, you know, almost 30 adults. And and this includes young adults, right? That, you know, are 18 or so. They're still in high school.
Sure.
And it was so much money that the community pumped into this thing. And,
oh, man,
I mean,
this that just rules.
She's out right now finishing wrapping presents. I mean, I'm not shitting you. She's super efficient. She's one of these people that wraps really well and really quickly. But she's been doing it for
people that wrap gifts fast are they're insane. But
yeah, and well, right? I mean, I can wrap gifts fast. Yeah, but it looks like a dog did it. but I mean, she's been wrapping. We have so many gifts that she and we're paying our staff to stay late and wrap if they want to too. So she and two or three other people have been wrapping for 5 hours a night.
Oh my God.
For 5 days.
Wow. Right?
Is there any kind of like news coverage of this going on? Is there anything
we can share? We don't like to brag about this kind of shit, man. No, I mean, I'm bragging about it to you, but
we love to spread the word. Cause I think that's just, that's a beautiful thing to do.
It's lovely. If it lives here or whatever, I mean, either way, good for you guys. I love hearing stories like that. That just, you know, near a tear in my eye over here.
the goal is not to make people think Old Nation is cool. I feel like if that was our goal, it would, even if we did the same thing, it would take the value away from it, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. And I could just hear from the way you're talking about it, the humbleness about it and just wanting to do a good thing. And I love that.
Right. And I mean, you know, God, man, I'm getting away with selling $14 or $18 four packs to people. You know what I mean? I owe it.
It's the least you could do, Travis. Yeah, no shit.
I don't know how many dollars I've thrown on 43.
We owe it to the world.
Yeah, no kidding. I will say, Electron Brown, one of my other favorite beers.
Awesome.
Also from you guys, and it is awesome.
Thank you. Thanks, man.
I'm not trying to wrap this up or anything, but Travis, I want to be sensitive of your time. We've been going a while. I'm in no rush to leave or anything, but I just want to give you an out here in case you want to wrap up soon.
Timing is up to you guys. My wife is still at work and my kids are sleeping. So it's up to you, man.
Sure. So let's just go a little bit more here and then we can wrap up. But one thing I had to touch on, and this is at least my last thing on the list, is I've never been able to try some of these assumingly delicious flavored M43s. First of all, one, do you hate that those exist? Is that like against like the brewer? Is
I it just super like, wondered
strictly
that,
yeah. for like marketing and stuff? Because it works. Like it gets everyone excited and they sell out instantly. But yep. I've tried so hard every year to try a damn strawberry M43. And my wife made me ask this too. If you do it again, is there a way you could set it aside for me to come and buy it from you?
Yes, of course. As much as you want. Let me know.
All right. Had to ask that. And then secondly, you must hate it, right? Yeah. Okay, deal.
I can't imagine it was your idea to throw this acidic fruit into the beer that you've just said was a pain in the literal dick to make.
Yeah. It was, you know, a I mean, it was the because literal dick. Yeah, it's a pain in my penis. There is, it makes me ache. But there is a, you know, look, man, I will tell it to you guys straight. It's not the first time I've said it. I think, you know, people, I understand why people like that kind of thing. Right. And that's why I make it.
I hate it, I'll be honest.
Right.
Yeah.
But I hate it. And so that's why I only make it once a year. Right. That adds up.
I love it. And you're like, oh, I'll make more of it. And you're like, no.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, there is a business perspective to this too, which is that M43 exists, right? And M43 exists as a beer that is, for everything that it, you know, represents, still an honest to Christ beer, right? Ah. It doesn't use any adjuncts outside of oats and wheat, which even by the German Reinheitsgebot in an ale is allowable, right? It doesn't, I mean, it cleaves to what beer has always been. And we're able to do this, we're able to create this kind of interesting beer, you know, for the M43, for the Boss Tweed, B43, whatever, while still kind of holding tight to that box that brewers kind of should be put in, right?
So let me see if I'm getting what you're saying. So like, you know, like where some people might just like take a good IPA and then like, you know, throw some flavoring in it or something that which automatically disqualifies it from like being able to get a delicious flavor from just core beer ingredients. M43 is kind of like as extreme to like some of these sweeter profiles you can get, you know, with sticking to those core ingredients. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah. I mean, that's all done with raw material selection and technique, right?
Yeah.
That's something that's hard to do. If it wasn't hard to do, every brewer would have M43.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
And like you said, I mean, the processes and cost that goes into it, like, of course.
Right. Right. I mean, it's I hate to sound like this, but to me, it's not a fucking joke. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we worked our balls off. My kids, you know, might go to college because of this beer. Right. So
that's cool. That's cool to put it that way. It's almost a legacy. It is a legacy.
It kind of, I mean, you will see, right. But I'm certainly not going to fuck that legacy up because I want to put marshmallows in it, right?
No, yeah. I definitely recommend a steering away from marshmallow M43. I might pass on that one even.
Or like whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And when you take something that, I mean, okay. All right. Are you guys old enough to remember Yanni? You remember that musician Yanni?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yanni's super fucking cheesy, right?
Sure.
Yanni's a great musician, technically, right?
Yanni.
But he's putting drum kits and shit that just doesn't belong in classical music into like classical music in order to make it more palatable to people who wouldn't understand it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That dude is a Bo billionaire. I don't blame him for doing that, right?
Oh, he made it to a Bo billionaire. Okay.
Maybe several Bo billionaires. But,
oh, wow. Good for him. Good for
billion.
So this guy, I mean, obviously I'm not trying to take away anything from this guy, but there's a point at which you make a decision, right? Mm-hmm. As a craftsman, I guess, where you say, okay, I'll say this. There's this idea in Germany that I learned whenever I was an apprentice, right? It's really important to tradesmen in Germany when you're taught to be a tradesman. whether you're a carpenter or even a plumber or a brewer or whatever. It's called Schlimmbesserung, and it is the idea of a negative improvement, right? That there's a point at which in the development of anything, more improvement or more fiddling with it makes it worse, right?
Yeah, Larry, I think I can relate this back to mountain biking for any of our listeners who
yes. are
like, hey, let's talk about a mountain bike real quick. That is what 100% me anytime I try to tinker with my mountain bike. Yeah. Particularly night before a race.
anyways. Right.
Digress. We'll go back.
No. Talk about it. Talk about the feeling that you have, right?
Yeah.
You know when it's happening, but you can't stop it.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, you know, this needs more lube. This needs to be tighter. This needs to be looser. And in the back, I'm like, that has never, ever been fucking touched ever. Right. It works perfectly fine
all year.
But for some reason, tomorrow it's not going to work if you don't fuck with it, especially right. all these things you've never touched before. And God forbid that they fall apart. You have no idea how to put them back together. But let's just dive in right now.
Right. And you know, the maybe the American version of this is what? Like you can't fix what's already not broken. That's what they say.
Yeah, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going for, Larry?
Yeah. What did I say? You cannot fix what one has not broken thus so far.
That's the English antecedent of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Maybe. But it is that same idea. And that got literally physically beaten into me when I was an apprentice in Germany, right? You have to know yourself and your ability well enough to know when you're putting, you know, you're polishing a turd or putting lipstick on a pig or whatever we say, you know, whatever the colloquial.
Well, polishing the turd.
Yeah. you know, it just doesn't, there's no sense to it. And so, you know, could you put strawberry in M43 and make it more like radical and extreme? I guess, right? You can, we do. People go nuts about it. Right? Is it right? I don't think that it is. And because I get to make that decision, I make it once a year and then that's it.
Awesome. I'm so glad I went down that road.
No kidding. That was. I had this thought in the back of my mind and I was like, Travis hates strawberry M43.
He probably
hates guava boss tweed. Probably
boss tweed is actually more interesting, but I also don't like that.
Yeah. What other M43 variants were there? There was a jalapeno
one. I didn't try that. I never tried any of them, but
that was me.
Mango.
Right. That was me just being like, you know what? Fuck it, man. Let's whatever.
If you want crazy, I'll show you crazy.
You want crazy. You want crazy.
Right. Exactly. And you'll note that we never did that again. but yeah, man, I mean, you know, that is how I feel about the strawberry beer. And that's not to say that you've had like Lindeman's Frambois, right? This raspberry Belgian beer or whatever. There are beers that, you know, that ache for that, right? The addition of fruit.
Yeah, like Soft Parade, sure. It's like it needs fruit, otherwise it's terrible.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's
literally made of fruit.
Right.
It's a fruit beer.
I, you know, those beers need it, and they're supposed to have it. And you can tell when you drink it, right?
They're brewed with fruit.
Yes. And I think that you can tell when you drink Strawberry M43 that we took Strawberry M43 and we made it slightly more acidic and we added strawberry extract and now it smells and tastes like strawberries a little and also M43, right? and there's no challenge there.
Again, really, really excited
exactly
about
what it tastes.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and, you know.
I mean, this is what we wanted, the honesty. This is great.
No, right. This is exactly what we wanted. This is, yeah.
Right. I mean, I know there are a lot of brewers that, you know, are happy to kind of, you know, give themselves a hand job about throwing whatever into beer, and that's fine. But you have to at some point in your professional life understand and accept that that's what you're doing, right? I take this job super seriously, right? I trained under the true honest to Christ masters that I trained under, most of them are dead now, right?
Lives on you.
And it, yeah, I mean, I know how corny that sounds, but I take it really fucking seriously, right?
That's awesome. All right. So on that note, shows. And maybe, yeah, well, definitely. I mean, obviously look at what we have now. And then kind of on that note, and maybe even a cool way to kind of, you know, put a bow on this episode is, you know, we've made it to this point. What's something that, you know, we've talked about trends too. So I think that's why this fits in too. But like, what's next that you're really excited about? Whether it's like, you know, a couple of years from now, like you see it on these blogs or something, like whatever it might be. Like,
yeah.
What's going to be the next?
Is there a beer on the horizon? Swing?
Yeah. And if there's not, that's fine. But like, what maybe is exciting to you anyways? I'd love to hear from a guy like you.
I mean, there is, you know, I mean, I think for folks, for craft beer drinkers, we're making stuff like this stout that we made. We just released the overprivileged stout. It's 13.9%.
Fucking awesome. That looked great.
Okay. Thanks. It's got a bunch of almonds and coconut in it, and it sounds makes people good. Super excited. And that's good. But for me, you know, I'm excited about this idea of kind of going down two roads here, right? I think that we're good enough to do that kind of thing and New England IPAs and all that, and also go back and revisit where we came from and make beers that are, you know, reasonably priced and expertly made that represent the place that I, you know, Europe, essentially. And I know that's going to be a big part of what it is that we do, right? In the next
year. Great. That sounds exactly. Brian has always said this to me, like, why don't they make like just like, and he's worded it in the opposite direction, but it sounds like the same thing. Like, why doesn't Bud Light just make like a craft beer or something? But it sounds like kind of the opposite, right? Like, where you want to make like a delicious, you know, kind of craft beer, but of something like maybe basic and accessible and affordable. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even about being, I mean, it is going to be affordable because I'm not going to overcharge for a beer that doesn't need to be overcharged, you know, for.
Okay.
But it is more the idea of traditional beer that is meant to be consumed like beer always has been. The challenge there is, you know, how can I make a beer that's as good as the beers I grew up making, right? And I was trained to make and charge a reasonable price for them here in the US. And, you know, this is exciting because it's a risk, right? I know what craft beer drinkers are going to say about this, right? Well, they're going to be like, oh, it's a Pilsner, boo, right? Or it's a Helles, boo, or it's an Oktoberfest, who cares? I care, right? And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But, you know, it's something that we're interested in getting involved in, man.
And it's a return to your roots of what the passions you have and sharing that as a perfection with your audience.
Yeah. And I hope I get the opportunity to talk to folks like I talked to you guys tonight about it. So, you know, I mean, hopefully folks, you know, there's going to be somebody who can grok on it. And maybe it'll take a long time and maybe it won't be us. That turns the tide to kind of brewer focused beer. But maybe it will. Who knows?
It really sounds like you've set a challenge for yourself to kind of keep yourself engaged in brewing. So you're like, hey, you know, we've reached this, you know, we did the M43, you know, we did some pretty wild stouts. Now I want to make a beer that I love to make. But your challenge now is to A, make it drinkable for everybody, and then, you know, B, sell it and make people excited about it. But I think you guys are, you're kind of ahead of the market there because no one's really doing that. I don't know. Best of luck to you. And I'm excited to see what happens.
Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate the chance to talk to you guys, and it's been a ton of fun. I've gone through several glasses of rye whiskey tonight, and
hell yeah,
I love it.
I appreciate drinking with you guys. I don't get to do this anymore.
Is it the best way to do a podcast?
I have one more question before we go.
Yeah,
How long did it take for M43 to come with instructions on the can?
Oh, wow, good question.
I feel like you had to have gotten 8 million complaints.
Like you woke up one morning and your inbox, was like 40 emails like, hey, I like this beer and everything, but I think
there's a booger in the bottom.
Yeah.
this is the short answer. You're right. We did get a ton of those emails. But at the beginning... At the beginning, I was like, man, we should put the same thing that old Belgian brewers used to put on their bottles, which is exactly what's on that can, right?
Yeah.
It's an illustration of rolling it or leaving some behind, right?
Uh-huh.
And everybody was like, no. Nobody's going to get that, you know? And then we got a bunch of these emails of people that were furious because they got a goober in their beer or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, see, I fucking told you, man. And we put it on the label. It took about 3 months.
3 months. Okay. Great question, Brian. I love that.
I love one of the times it rarely happens, but I ordered a can M43 from a bar in GR and the bartender rolled it on the bar before giving it to me. And I was like, yes.
And every German bartender knows the power of that thing, man. If you get a wheat beer in Germany, the bartender not only does that, but they also take the bottle and turn it completely upside down in your glass. And as the glass fills, they'll pull up the bottle until the glass is full, right? That's the technique of pouring wheat beer, particularly Hefeweizens, in Germany.
What an art form.
Wow.
Yeah,
so you put the bottle completely in the glass and just...
Upside down in the glass so that the top of the bottle touches the bottom of the glass.
Yeah.
And you slowly raise up the bottle, which allows the beer to go into the glass until it's at the top when you remove it quickly. And that creates the head at the top. And it's beautiful pour every time.
Wow.
I love it.
I'm going to try that. Yeah.
I've learned so much about beer. This is very exciting.
For real though. And I know it was a rocky start to get this working, but man, was it worth it? This has been such a fun episode, you know?
Yeah.
Fun getting to know you and, you know, for all that you've taught us and like you said, all the beers that we've drank because of you.
Thank you guys.
Travis, how often are you, when we're allowed to, how often are you in the brewery itself?
You know, pretty much 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, just like any working stiff, you know?
Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on out anytime.
We'd love to meet you.
If you guys have anything left in your glass, I got a little bit left in my glass here. I'd love to toast you out.
Let's do it. I got one sip left.
All right.
Hey. Thank you, Travis. Cheers to Old Nation and cheers to I don't know.
Well, here's to you guys for running a great podcast. I really appreciate it. It's been great to get to know you. I hope it doesn't stop here.
Hey, cheers to Old Nation and cheers to you, Travis. Thank you for joining
beautifully
us.
Beautifully put. I've got nothing else to say. You guys did a great job. Cheers. Yummy.
There's that goober.
All right. And then thanks everyone for listening. There's that goober.
I rolled my can. I didn't get the goober.
Okay. All right. It's been fun. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right.